And but you know, you're talking about how as a tree planted by a river, you're always producing fruit. And this is part of what, you know, as human beings, we want to be fruitful. We want to have impact. We want to make a difference. And we don't want our lives to mean nothing. We want it to actually kind of make it so that people can say, wow, I'm so glad that Ken came into my life. There's fruit coming off from Ken. You know, I've always thought Galatians chapter 5, where it talks about the fruit of the Spirit. Are people eating the fruit of love from your life, or the fruit of patience? Or they come up to you, go, oh, there's this gentleness and kindness with Ken, and it's this beautiful fruit. I can just pick off his life, and I can eat it, and it kind of changes my life. It satisfies me and fulfills me. You know, I've always wanted to be fruitful, not only fruitful in character, like Galatians 5 talks about, but fruitful in honoring God and making disciples. And I've had various stages where I felt very fruitful, and there's been other stages where I've felt less fruitful. But what does it mean to be fruitful? How can we be more fruitful? And John 15 is all about that. John 15 is the intersection between fruitfulness, discipleship, and intimacy. And I love that. If we can draw a Venn diagram with maybe, you know, we could do that with three circles: discipleship, fruitfulness, and intimacy. And then the intersection, you could write John 15. It's, there we go. So we've been going through John 15. We spent 3 weeks in just the first 8 verses, and we looked at the fact that God, who is God the Father, is the gardener. Verse 1 says, Jesus said to them, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. That blew me away. Often we hear about Jesus being the true vine, and we do talk about that, but God the Father as gardener, as the one who comes along and who, what's a gardener's job? What is the job of the garden? It's to bring fruit. It's to make a difference. It's to make sure that the plant is as healthy as possible so it can be as productive as possible. And actually, to know that the creator of the universe, God the Father, you know, sometimes our relationships with our fathers can be complicated, but we have a perfect Father in heaven who his job description is to make me as fruitful as possible, as healthy as possible, so that someone can, you know, when I get cut off in traffic sometimes, that the fruit of patience can be evident. And my children can see, oh, I'm going to eat some of that fruit of patience that I see demonstrated in my dad's life. So that encourages me. God the Father is the gardener. We looked at in week 2 how Jesus is the true vine. There's lots of false vines that we can plug into, lots of different places where we can get a source of life, where we can try to be fruitful from. And, you know, there can be temporary fruit. But John 15 verses 1 to 8 talks about how there can be fruit that remains. There can be much fruit. And Jesus is the true vine. And we're called to plug into him. We're called to, and by abiding him, it's this ongoing life-giving relationship. You know, me coming to church on a Sunday isn't me being plugged into the true vine. Isn't, as a branch being connected to Jesus. Just going to the church, that's not what it's about. You know, a branch, you don't see, you know, let's go out to the Yarra Valley. Who wants to come out on a road trip? Let's actually do an object lesson. We'll get in a van, a bus. We'll head out to the Yarra Valley. You don't see the branches just lying on the side next to the vines, right? The vine branch, the vine rootstock. You don't see the branches kind of just jumping in for 2 hours on a Sunday and then, you know, getting some life sustenance in that time and then kind of disconnecting, right? They're not just doing their religious duty. They're not just like 15 minutes in the morning, every morning type thing, you know, to tick off the box, I've spent time with Jesus. No, it's a continual life-giving relationship. And that's what I've always wanted. I've always wanted to have a continual life-giving relationship with Jesus. Wow, because I want to have fruit in my life. I want to make a difference. I want my life to, you know, there's a world that needs a whole bunch of answers. And I believe that people who are connected to Jesus in an ongoing life-giving relationship can provide some of those answers. At least they can walk around with that fruit of love, joy, peace, kindness, gentleness, self-control. People can take that off our lives and eat it, consume it, be refreshed by it. And we also looked at how we are the branches. There's risk and there's reward in being a branch. The risk is that we're cut off. You know, first 8 verses, we're cut off and thrown into the fire. That's a risk, right? You know? But there's also a reward. There's an incredible reward. Where there's risk, there's also a reward. That reward is that we can be fruitful. We're the ones that are called to have fruit. So, if you want to go into more depth, the podcasts are online. You know what I've been doing recently? I don't know if anyone knows this. I don't know if anyone cares. But I've been doing it. And on the podcast, I've been putting my notes up as well. So you can actually see the notes that I have. You can get them out. And you can get in front of the mirror. You can preach a sermon yourself just using my notes. You know, any of you budding young preachers out there? You know, I see you, Jeff. Come on, man. Come on, Jeff. Let's see this. Love it. So next week, Jeff. We'll see. Okay. All right. And then last week we looked at how Jesus, he gives us this command to love, and it kind of doesn't make sense with our cultural definition of love. Don't we feel love? Don't we fall into love? You know, God didn't appear before me. He didn't send an angel, you know, great big angel glowing in front of me, say, Ken, I've got a message from you from Jesus, and Jesus commands you to love Kira. You know, I wasn't commanded to love her necessarily. I was attracted to her. There was a physical attraction, then, as an emotional connection, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that kind of snowballs into, you know, the 15 years of marriage that we've had now. And, it doesn't make sense that Jesus, by our culture's definition, he commands us to love. And he does it twice. I command you to love each other. But I looked at how that the command to love is an invitation to intimacy. Not only is it an invitation to intimacy, it's a declaration of our identity. We're a family. You know, I do command my kids to love each other because they fight at times. Say, hey, you're Johnsons. You've got to love each other, okay? And so as a father who commands his children to love, it makes sense that Jesus commands us to love each other because we're tempted to fight each other. But we are not each other's enemy. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't feel that way. Sometimes we are each other's enemy, you know. But we're not. This relationship that we have, you know, Kira's not going to be my wife in the new creation. She's going to be my sister, you know, and Jen will be my sister and Matt will be my brother forever. The relational connection that lasts forever is the relational connection we have in Jesus, not the family connections that we have here. My children will be my brothers and sisters. My dad will be my brother. So we're commanded to love. It's an invitation to intimacy, a declaration of identity. It's also the foundation of our impact. The world will know that you are my disciples by your love for each other. And, it's interesting. Jesus doesn't say the world will know that you're my disciples by raising people from the dead or by giving money to the poor or by, you know, often that's implied in loving each other. But he says by your love for each other. Wow. And sometimes churches are known as places of great offense and politics and schisms and, you know, we do one thing one way and it's just not meant to be that way. So let's move on to John chapter 15, verses 9 to 11. Here we go. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. So I want to focus on that highlighted verse there, verse 11. John 15, verse 11. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. So, we all want joy. We all have an intuitive understanding of what joy is. It's a sense of, you know, not just being happy, but a sense of fulfillment, a sense of contentment, a sense of, you know, no matter what's going on, there's something deep in me where it's not circumstantial. Joy isn't circumstantial. It's not based on what's going on around us. It's this inner peace in a sense. So we all want joy. We have it at times. And then we lose it. And then we do whatever we can to find it again. There's so many people. You know, human beings are joy seekers, aren't they? We heard the term thrill seeker, pleasure seeker. Really, we're just really joy seekers. We're looking for joy. We're looking for a sense of contentment and of wholeness and of satisfaction. You know, any Rolling Stones fans here, you know, still can't, you know, trying to find satisfaction. Matt, I'll get you up to do a rendition a little bit later on. I was going to try for a second. I was almost going to start doing some karaoke, but I thought, I won't do that. But if I had a karaoke machine and the lyrics, I might. All right. So we all want joy. We have it. We lose it. We do whatever we can to find it again. Human beings are joy seekers. We're looking for completion in ourselves, in our lives. So, we can find it. We can find it in many different places. The world offers us joy. Joy, in inverted commas. The world offers us joy. The world says, you know, strive for pleasure. Go to Bali. Swim up to the swim up bar and enjoy the hot weather and the sunshine and the cheap prices, and that's joy. Strive for pleasure, strive for recognition, strive for power, and you'll have joy. You know, sometimes there's as human beings we can be so insecure at times, and we try to build a fortress of stuff that makes us feel like we're accepted, and kind of for a moment we can be distracted from the lack of joy that's inside of us by this empty joy that the world offers us. The world offers us its joy and gives us some lessons that are less than helpful, such as don't give, get. Don't focus on yourself. Don't worry about, you know, do what's right for you. You know, you made a commitment to someone in a relationship and now you no longer feel the joy, no longer feel the joy. So you got to do what's right for you. Just gotta leave that person. Go find someone who makes you happy. Don't give, get. Don't serve, be served. It's not about what you can do for other people. You know, you've got to look out for number one. You know who's number one? You're number one. Make sure, there's some truth in that. You know, I'm not saying let's be, you know, all ascetics and start flagellating ourselves or whatever. But, you know, there's the way the world presents a path to completion and satisfaction and fulfillment is wrong. Jesus tells us that we can have his joy. That's what this passage is all about. I have told you this so that my joy may be my joy. This is Jesus speaking. I, Jesus, am telling you this so that my joy, the joy of Jesus, can be in you and that your joy may be complete. Jesus tells us that we can have his joy, that it can be in us, that it can complete our joy. Who wants complete joy? Who wants a sense, not just 50%, not just 90%, not just 99%, but complete joy, 100%. Like your joy meter filled up to the top. Think of what has got you down at different times. It's, you know, using the old temperaments personality test, I'm a phlegmatic, kind of laid back kind of guy. Phlegmatic melancholy. Melancholy is kind of, you know, a little bit creative, but a little bit, you know, up and down. You know, can be a little bit depressive at times. And so there's different seasons in my life where I can feel really great and then, you know, just awesome breakthrough and all of a sudden you just kind of feel a little bit down and, you know, a little bit, you know, Kira, can you go make me a hot chocolate? Put some marshmallows in it. You know, I need just like, maybe that's the world's joy, but I just need that for now. And, thanks Kira. Appreciate that. And, now think about what's gotten you down at different times. What's left you unsatisfied? What's robbed you of your joy? You know, how often do we just think, you know, where's my joy gone? Oh, I was happy yesterday. Then something happened. You know, someone said something. Or you heard some news on the TV. Or something's going on in your family. Or relational issues popped up. And then all of a sudden, the joy that you had yesterday, where you're undefeatable. And then bang, it's gone. It's been robbed. Or is it something big? Sometimes it's something big that robs us of our joy. Sometimes it's something small. Something that should be small, you know. Your boss didn't, you know, kind of, you know, was a bit short with you, or, you know, your pastor at your church didn't shake your hand and didn't come up to you, or, you know, I'm sorry if I've done that, which I've done many times to a lot of you. Not on purpose, not to make you feel small or anything, but sometimes even something like that, seeming innocently, something innocent can rob us of our joy. So think about what has got you down at different times in your life, left you unsatisfied or robbed you of your joy. Think about it. I can remember that time. Now imagine having your joy filled up. Imagine having your joy being completed, having your joy at the 100% meter completed. So much so that no matter what happened to you, big or small, your joy remained intact. What if your joy couldn't be robbed? What if your joy all of a sudden wasn't about what happens around you, but is what has been deposited inside of you. Would you want to live life that way? I know I would want to live life that way. I don't want to be going through the ups and downs and feeling, oh, something's been robbed of me, and then that impacting the way I treat my children, treat my wife, the way that, you know, I greet people at church or whatever. And, you know, obviously life happens, right? Stuff happens. It's not perfect. It's not necessarily a bed of roses. But can there be joy that's complete and deep inside me that is independent of my external circumstances? Well, I think Jesus says yes. He says, I have told you these things so that my joy, the joy of the Son of God, can be in you and that your joy can be complete. So the world offers us a joy, but Jesus offers us his joy. And he has a logic, a progression, building steps, a flowchart of joy. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Jesus has a definite logic of joy. Basically, he connects joy to obedience and to love. I have told you this. What has he just told us? Remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love. What has he told us? Remain in my love. Remain in his love? How do we remain in his love? By obeying his commands. What is that command? Love one another. Like, it's a little bit further on in the passage. Remain in my love. So I have told you this. What? To love. Remain in my love. How? Obey my commands. How do we do that? What is that command? Love one another. So we love each other, obeying the command of Jesus, and we remain in his love. And this leads to his joy being in us. And his joy being in us leads to our joy being complete. So what does it mean to have complete joy? It's not just about having, it's not just about euphoria or about an excitement. It's about something, like I was saying before, something deep inside of us that gives us a sense of fullness and completion and satisfaction that's independent of what your boss has just said to you, independent of what result you just got back in your exam, independent of what your bank account looks like, or, you know, how your deposit's going for the house or the mortgage repayment or whatever. So many different things that can rob us of our joy. So what does Jesus do? He connects joy to obedience and to love. Jesus knows who we are. He knows what it means to be human. He is fully human as well as the one who created humans. He knows what we are. He knows what we need to flourish. What is joy? Joy is this sense of flourishing. Do you want to always be flourishing? Do you want a sense of, you know what, no matter what's going on around me, I am walking in and living in a state of flourishing? I mean, that's a great term to use. I'm just, you know, just extemporaneous, just came to me. Thank you, Holy Spirit. But this idea of human flourishing, especially in the idea of this metaphor of a vine, of a branch being fruitful. Joy is human flourishing. Jesus knows who we are. He knows what we are. He knows what we need to be and to do to experience flourishing, no matter our external situations. And this is basically, Jesus knows that we were made for relationship. Jesus knows that we were made for relationship. He knows that ultimately what we are looking for is human flourishing in the context of being in relationship with one another. He knows that sin or disobedience or what Adam and Eve did broke perfect relationship. So life used to be perfect, right? Perfect relationship between us and God, perfect relationship between us and other human beings, and perfect relationship between us and creation. And after they rebelled and they rejected God's perfection, the first two brothers couldn't even live in peace together. One brother killed the other. And ever since then, human relationships have been broken and shattered, whether from the micro scale of domestic violence or, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends arguing and dumping one another and cheating on each other, all the way to global conflict. We broke relationships. We broke the perfection that we had. But we were made for perfect relationship. You know, that's a thought experiment. Adam and Eve don't sin. Human beings grow and flourish. And we take over the whole earth. And, you know, over time, you know, we start to look a bit different or whatever. But then we recognize, but we're one family. We're actually just one family. One human family all over the earth in perfect relationship. That's the way it was meant to be. And Jesus knows that. And that's the way we're meant to flourish. That's the way we're meant to have complete joy. And he knows that broken relationship robs us of complete joy. That's what sin's done. And so he says, obey my commands, love each other, and then my joy will be in you and your joy will be complete. So for Jesus, maybe, Jeff, yep, put your jumper back on the right way around. Yep, it's a good man. You had your arms through this way. That's, my mum used to do that. Must be a Malaysian thing. For Jesus, joy is the natural result from loving him and loving others. You know, it's not really rocket science. It's pretty simple. You probably could have said, you know, Ken, yeah, that makes sense to me. Ken, what you know, I knew this stuff. So this is what Jesus is saying. Jesus not only is saying that I've told you these things so that my joy may be in you, that your joy may be complete. But Jesus saying the joy that he wants us to obey him and to love each other so that his joy can be in us to actually complete us, to be who we truly are as human beings. You know, Jesus is the archetype of humanity. He is the true model, the true template of what it means to be a human being. He's the true human, the true king. And he shows us how we can be completely human in him. The joy of Jesus in us completes us. It's simple. We are fully human, satisfied, content, and joyful. We're fully flourishing as human beings when we are connected to Jesus by loving his people. Now, Jesus bridges the gap between those two dimensions of us and God. That's what was broken in the fall between us and humanity. He is fully human, fully God. He fixes those two dimensions. He makes it possible for us to be fully loved and accepted by God and to fully love and accept one another. We are fully human, satisfied, content, joyful, flourishing when we are connected to Jesus by loving his people. And I made this point last week. You know, how can we, the point why Jesus commands us twice to love one another is that when we don't love one another as brothers and sisters in Christ, when we don't do that, what we do is we cut ourselves off from his body, which is the church, which means we cut ourselves off from Jesus. So by not loving one another, we cut ourselves off from the true vine and we are just a branch slowly dying. That's why I challenged, who are we not in relationship with? Who are we offended at? Who aren't we reaching out to? Is there someone that you need to reach out to? You know, for their sake, but also for your sake. Don't cut yourself off from the body of Christ, from other Christians. But love them as you are commanded to. Love them as you are commanded to, because in doing so, you're loving Jesus. You're staying connected to him. So the joy of Jesus in us completes us. The joy of Jesus in us motivates us. Do you want some motivation? Come on, Ken. Try to motivate us a bit. Here we go. The joy of Jesus in us motivates us. If you look at Luke 15, there's three stories. There's a lost sheep, there is a lost coin, and there is a lost son. All these things are lost. And then the shepherd who lost his sheep, he risks 99 sheep to find the lost sheep. The woman who lost her coin, she works. She works really hard to cleans up her whole house to find this one lost coin. The father who lost his son waits and he waits and he waits and he waits. Risk, work, wait. These three people do these things for these three things that are important to them. A lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son. Why do they do it? For joy. It talks about joy. Lost sheep is found. The shepherd comes back with joy. The lost coin is found. She throws a party because she found a lost coin. Joy. Flourishing. What does the father do when his son comes back after he's been waiting so long? Why was he waiting for so long? For joy. A party is thrown. So what motivated those characters in those stories Jesus told was joy. The joy of being reunited with something, of finding something that was lost. And what can motivate us? What can motivate us? The joy of Jesus in us motivates us. You know, we're called to be honor God and to make disciples. You know, I never want us as Every Nation Melbourne to be motivated by, oh, that's church growth, success, increase in church giving, invitations to bigger churches to preach, to travel around and get a book deal. What motivates me to spend time with people who don't know Jesus is the joy of finding a brother or a sister who once was lost but now is found. It's the joy of Jesus in us. It completes our joy, but more than that, it completes us as humans. The joy of Jesus in us motivates us. The joy of Jesus in us sustains us. Do I have this up there? The joy of Jesus in us sustains us. This is Hebrews 12 verse 1 to 2, famous scripture. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus was motivated by joy, and the joy of Jesus in us. Jesus was sustained on the cross by the joy that was set before him. And the joy of Jesus in us likewise sustains us when we go through tough times, when things are difficult. So Jesus says, these things I have told you, that my joy may be in you, that your joy may be complete. These things, obey my command to love, and my joy will be in you, and your joy will be complete. Not only will your joy be complete, but you will be complete as human beings. You will flourish as human beings. Not only will you flourish, but you will be motivated to experience this joy over and over again, manifest when people who don't know me come to know me, and I use you to minister to them. Not only will you be motivated, but you'll be sustained when things are hard and tough, just like I was sustained by joy. This is what I give to you. What a gift. What a gift. What a privilege. What a great King to give us this gift of joy. You know, what this city needs from us in Every Nation Melbourne is a people who have the joy of Jesus in them. I don't want to give to people just, you know, the dry, sarcastic humor of Ken Johnston and my own kind of level of joy. I appreciate that you guys laugh at times, my sarcastic, dry jokes. But I want to give them the joy of Jesus in me, actually. That's what they really need. They don't need just another comedian. What they need is connection, relational joy that completes me, flows through me and to them. That's what this city needs. A joy that lasts. A joy that overcomes circumstances. A joy that is so deep inside of me that it completes me as a human being. And on that note, I hand to Jen. Thanks, Jen.